Section 5, completing the annual returns. Starting with the P35 employer annual return, I will remind you that only one P35 return should be filed for each pay-as-you-earn scheme, and that we must never submit a paper P35 as well as doing the filing online. The P35 is a five-part return, starting with Part 1, which provides a summary of employees and directors, listing for each individual the details of their total Class 1 NICs and income tax payments. Next, in Part 2, we have the summary of payments for the tax year, adding together the Class 1 NICs and income tax deductions, and then deducting any advance received from HMRC to give us a combined total at Box 9. We then have to add in the total of any student loan deductions at Box 10 and deduct any statutory payments recovered to give us a net figure at Box 22. For relevant employees who are contractors also, we must then add any CIS deductions from subcontractors and deduct the tax and NICs paid already to leave a balance payable now. At Box 28, we can deduct any CIS deductions that the employer has suffered as a CIS subcontractor, leaving perhaps a balance to be paid by the 19th of April 2011 payment deadline, not by the 19th of May PAYE annual return deadline. This is why we need to either prepare the return or at least do a reconciliation before that 19th of April deadline so that we can identify any balance in payment that might need to be made in order to avoid an interest charge. Part 3 of the P35 is the checklist, where every question must be answered by the employer. These questions need to be considered carefully. Question 1 asks, have you included a Form P14 end of year summary or completed and retained a Form P38S student employees for every person in your paid employment, either on a casual basis or otherwise, during the above tax year? If the answer is no, we are told to please send a Form P38A employer supplemental return, and I will look at that form in a moment. Question 2 asks, did you make any free of tax payments to any employee? In other words, did you bear any of the tax yourself rather than deduct it from the employee? HMRC's Help Book E10 guidance says a free of tax payment is a payment where the employer rather than the employee bears any tax due. I will always tell you that this does not apply to any payment grossed up through the payroll or to any payments included in a PAYE settlement agreement, where in that case the liability is transferred to the employer. The answer to this question is almost always no. Question 3 asks us, so far as you know, did anyone else pay expenses or in any way provide vouchers or benefits to any of your employees whilst they were employed by you during the year? This might be relevant for someone on secondment, where perhaps the foreign parent or subsidiary company is paying some of the expenses. Or it may apply to a customer or supplier incentive scheme. A yes answer would be required if the employer was involved in those arrangements, but otherwise the answer will generally be no. Question 4A asks, did anyone employed by a person or company outside the UK work for you in the UK for 30 or more days in a row? And question 4B says, if yes, have you included them on a Form P14? HMRC guidance in the Help Book E10 says, if the answer to the first question is yes, you will have to complete and enclose a Form P14 for each employee concerned. However, I can say that this would not always be necessary, because an employee coming from a country with which the UK has a double taxation agreement would not have to have a P14 completed or tax deducted if they're in the UK for less than 183 days and the costs are not met by the UK company. Question 5A asks us, have you paid any of an employee's pay to someone other than the employee, for example, to a school? And then question 5B says, if yes, have you included the pay on their Form P14? This is a classic error where the employer has reimbursed the employee or director or the school for school fees that are payable by the employee or director. The NIC liability falls within Class 1, not Class 1A, and the NIC should have been paid through the payroll, not through the P11DB. HMRC guidance in Helpbook E10 also points out that this does not include attachment of earnings orders, payments to the child support agency, and salary sacrifice arrangements. Question 6A asks, are you a service company? And question 6B says, if yes, have you operated the intermediaries legislation, sometimes known as IR35, or the managed service companies legislation? This doesn't apply to most employers completing end-of-year returns, but it is a difficult area, and for more detailed information, we should have a look at the CWG2, the Employer Further Guide to Pay-as-You-Earn and NICs. The Helpbook E10 also has some guidance on this point, which, as I say, is not relevant to the vast majority of employers. It will be of concern to limited companies, LLPs and partnerships that might be caught by the IR35 or managed service company legislation. Turning to part 4 of the P35, quite a small part, this is about contracted out pension schemes, and we have to enter the employer contracted out or econ number from the contracting out certificate, and there should only be one number to enter there. Finally, part 5 is the employer certificate and declaration, where we tick one box to confirm the P14s are enclosed or have been sent separately, and we have to state the number of parts, not the number of P14s, where with large employers, the P14s may be sent in batches. We also have boxes to complete to confirm if a P38A employer supplementary return is enclosed, and to say whether forms P11D and a P11DB are due. My advice to employers is to consider these questions carefully before just ticking the boxes. Too often I see them incorrectly completed. Now let me turn to the P14 end-of-year summary forms, where the paper version has changed for 2010-11, becoming a two-part form instead of the old three parts, where the orange was income tax, the green NICs, and there was a blue copy for the P60 for employees. Anyone using a paper form will find that there is only one HMRC copy plus the P60, which is one of the administrative savings that HMRC has brought in. However, I do understand that some employers may already have received three-part forms and they can go ahead and still use them. A P14 is required for every employee employed in the year, including any leavers, who have earnings in excess of the lower earnings limit of £97 per week or £421 per month. A P60 must be provided to all employees still employed on the 5th of April 2011. But should not be given to any employees who leave the employment before the end of the tax year, even if they leave on the 31st of March. The deadline for providing a P60 to employees, as I've already said, is the 31st of May 2011. Employers can provide copies or duplicates, which should be marked copy or duplicate, and for the first time for 2010-11, P60 forms can be provided in electronic format to employees, whereas previously the requirement was to provide them with a paper P60. Next, let us consider the P38A employer supplementary return, which I view as the return of casual labour and which is often overlooked. It is for workers for whom you have not completed a form P14 or form P38S for the year 6th of April 2010 to the 5th of April 2011. You must complete this form if you answered no to question one of the checklist on your form P35 employer's annual return. Employers need to sign one declaration on page 1 or page 2, where we ask if a P46 is held, sign statement A or B, and was the worker paid less than the £97 per week or £421 per month. If the answer is yes to both questions, in other words, statement A or B signed, paid less than 97 per week or £421 per month, we can sign the front page declaration and that's it. No other information needs to be provided. However, if no is the answer to either question, we must then complete section A or section B of the P38A. We would enter details in section A where a worker was paid £97 or more in any week, or £421 per month or more in any month, where they've been taken on for more than a week. We would enter details in Section B of any worker paid more than £100 in the year and not already listed in Section A. Yes, only £100. That's a very old limit that hasn't been uprated. There are some special rules for harvest casuals, which I won't cover on this podcast, but where you can find details in the CWG2 Further Guide to Pay As You Earn on pages 65 and 66. Next, the form P38S for student employees, which is another of the annual PAY returns, but it is the one and only form that does not have to be submitted to HMRC. It has to be retained by the employer for a minimum of 3 years plus the current year. The P38S must be completed by the student when she or he starts working for the employer. The employer must complete the form at the year end or when the student leaves the employment. A P38S form must be retained for every student employee working for the employer in the school holidays, and it doesn't apply to employees who work outside of school holidays. The P38S procedure allows employers to pay student employees without deducting income tax. It does not provide for pay-as-you-earn procedures to be ignored completely. In preparing for payroll year-end, we must ask, have the forms been completed? And has any student been paid more than the £6,475 personal allowance limit in the year to 5th of April 2011? Code 0T should have been applied to any payment in excess of £6,475. So this is one time when we need to check this. Do we need to make an adjustment before we close the payroll down? Do we need to get the forms in? And as I will say on the CPD courses, particularly at Easter time, we may have to get students to sign another P38S for the following tax year. The P38S procedure doesn't apply to Class 1 NICs, which are due if the earnings exceed the earnings threshold of £110 per week or £476 per month, unless, of course, the student employee is under age 16 when there are no NICs for either the employee or the employer. Section 6, Summary. The completion and filing of employer annual payroll returns is an important and onerous task, and one that is made more difficult because we only do it once a year. Preparation is important, and checks and balances, including reconciliation of the payroll payments and deductions, have to be made before we start on the process of filing these PAY returns. The next step is the filing of the returns, which for most employers, with very few exceptions, has to be done online. That is something I will look at in part 2 of this 2010-11 payroll year-end podcast. Thank you.